Cause everything I buy these days has got a foreign name. From the kind of car I drive to my video game.
I got a Nikon camera, a Sony color TV.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench. Okay, time for the Shooting Bench, 12th of January on a Tuesday. And we've got a few interesting things to talk about tonight, hopefully. We're going to, first off, I think I told you last night that I will be, and I put this, made the official announcement on Facebook today and on our website, that I would be the exclusive handgun instructor for Defense Techniques Academy, and hopefully through what I can do, with any luck, I can help them to grow and become a force to be reckoned with in at least in Arizona, hopefully in the Southwest, maybe in the whole cotton picking world. You never know. But guy runs that named Pete Lanteri, very experienced guy. He's worked down on the border quite a bit. Recently moved out here. I say recently, it's probably been close to a year now, but moved out here from New York. He had all he could stand of what was going on out there, and he said, you know what? I'm done. Just put it in the truck and drive away. And he did. So he's got a business back here. He has to go back here occasionally and visit, but he doesn't go anymore than he absolutely have to. Yeah, Doc, you made it just in time, brother. Just in time for the Gaston Glock show. Yeah, yeah. If I win that $1.5 billion, am I gonna have some Glocks? Whew, man, I'm going to pave my driveway with Glock frames. I'm gonna have Glock pillows. I'm gonna have Glock bar stools. We're gonna have Glock everything. Lots and lots of Glocks. So, anyway, the one thing I want to do, and we've got Radio Doc in here, can help vouch for anything if I say it wrong, but one of our listeners, and that listener can pipe up if he wants to, but if you don't want to, that's fine too. But just ask my recommendation for CB and stuff here, and there's lots of good choices. There's not too many really bad CBs out there. A lot of people don't understand that. They think Uniden is cheap stuff. Well, the insides, the motherboards and stuff, and a lot of brand name radios are made by Uniden. So there's nothing wrong with buying Uniden. There's nothing wrong with buying Radio Shack. I told you in a show here several months ago that I had a Radio Shack radio. Matter of fact, Radio Doc finally sold it for me, and I had that radio, and I run it constantly. It stayed on 24/7 for I got that radio probably 1978 or 79, and I had it on, like I said, 24/7. It's the first thing that goes into a new truck all the time. I turn it on and never turn it off until I change trucks, unless I'm going to be gone, you know, away from the truck for a couple of weeks or something like that. And Radio Doc, finally, when he was working for me there in Farmington, he spiffed that radio up a little bit and wound up selling it. And that was in 2008, 2009, somewhere in there. So that's how long that Radio Shack radio ran. And it was tuned up and worked really well. But Uniden has a really great radio out there that's a upper and lower sideband, a single sideband radio. And that is the, I believe it's the 980SS or something like that. So there were several choices that this listener put out there to, you know, what would you recommend this? And he showed me some pictures, some antennas, and I didn't even look them up. You know, I said, this is what you need to get, and this is what I like. And I recommended a Wilson 1000, and he wound up settling, since the 5000 is just, you know, 10 or 12 bucks more. Well, he went ahead and got the Wilson 5000, which not necessarily needed for the type of radio that he got, but it is a superior antenna. And he got that little Uniden. So he's set up. If he wants to, you know, add a little power to it or something, you know, he's got everything he needs there. But he asked me this, and this is the problem. And Radio Doc, I'm confident, will agree with me on this. People buy radio, they wonder why they don't work. They buy them and they're not happy with them and all that. It's because, and this is what this listener asked me, he says, well, is it just plug and play? Can I just install it and it works? I said, no, that's not the way it works. These antennas have to be tuned somewhat to the radio. Once in a while, you get lucky and you pop one in and it's already close enough to work pretty well. But more often than not, it needs a little bit of tuning up. And if it's too very far out, you can damage your radio by trying to talk on it. So, and getting back to what I was saying earlier, I think this is what happened to a lot of the CB industry, because everybody got them for a while. Everybody, there were thousands of them out there. And then after a few years, they started dwindling and, tapering off a little bit. And I think that at least part of the reason for this is the fact that people will go out and buy. They go to Walmart or wherever, Target, and just buy a $29.95 radio and a $19.95 antenna, and they go pop it on their car and take off and go try to talk on it and find out they can't talk across the parking lot on it. It's because the SWRs on that antenna have to be tuned to the radio and to the vehicle that it's mounted on. If it's tuned, that doesn't mean that you can't take it off of one vehicle and make it work on another, because you can. It may not be perfect, but it'll be fine. It'll be good enough. Once the antenna is tuned to the radio, as long as you don't do something real stupid with it, well, it'll work fine if you change vehicles. But this guy said that I've already got a mount on the bumper. And I said, well, take it off and throw it away so it won't be on your bumper anymore. That's not where you want to put your antennas. Your antenna needs to be somewhere as close to the center of the vehicle as you can get it practically. And hopefully on a flat surface of some kind. Now, there's some exceptions to that. But, just a general statement there, that's kind of where it needs to be. When you put it back on the back bumper, or any bumper or fender, wherever, you put it on the on a fender over a tire on the side of a fender, in the first place, you can wind up damaging the antenna by driving through a heavy brush and stuff. In the second place, even when and if you get it tuned properly in that place, it's going to talk best the furthest distance across. Let's say if you put it on the right-hand rear fender or right in the right-hand corner rear bumper, it's going to talk best towards the right-hand front corner of the vehicle. You're going to lose a whole lot of performance to the rear. So the closer you are to the center, you put it up on the toolbox of a pickup or up on the cab, the center of the passenger compartment on a passenger car or something, and you'll get absolutely the best performance out of it. Now, this guy asked me, he said, well, do I have to drill a hole in my cab? And I said, well, if you're going to get a roof mount, yes, you do. If you're going to get a magnetic mount, then no, you don't. You know, there's pros and cons to both of them. I drilled the hole for mine, and I don't regret it a bit. I didn't buy the pickup so it would have resale value. I don't care. I bought it to last, you know, until it dies, and then I'm going to go push it off a cliff somewhere. And and Radio Doc said, you know, the 102-inch steel whip worked well on bumpers and stuff. Yes, they did. But you still had a lack of performance towards the end of the where the antenna was mounted. And 102-inch stainless steel whips are great. A lot of people don't like them because they're too long. They hit on everything. They hit power lines and canopies and every cotton picking thing in the world out there. But I love them. I love those antennas. I ran one for, geez, I don't know how long, years and years. Yeah, I had it mounted up in the center of my toolbox behind the cab. And I tell you what, that was an awesome antenna. I loved it. But I like this Wilson 5000 that I have on my truck now. It is, as far as I'm concerned, it's equally as good, not quite as cumbersome, not quite as in the way as the 102-inch whip was. And but I wouldn't. I've still got two or three 102-inch stainless steel whips on mounts, wired up and ready to go. I can throw one on there at any given time. But anyway, if you decide, and I strongly encourage people to get CBs. I believe strongly in this day and age in redundant communications. CB, sideband, ham, you know, GMR, the whole nine yards. As many different types of communication as you can feasibly put in a vehicle or in a back. The thing about those little Bofangs is you can program those for all the UHF and VHF channels. So you've got your GMRS channels and everything on there. And Radio Doc had put a 102-inch stainless steel whip on the top of the building in Farmington, actually in Luna also. And that base that we had at that time, and actually we had a different radio in Luna than we did in Farmington. We had a kind of a nothing fancy, very plain Jane little base that we had in Farmington, but I'll tell you what, with that thing tuned properly and up on the top of that metal roof like that, that thing would talk way out yonder. And we talked to people routinely, 25, 30 miles away from up there. Pretty regular, depending on weather conditions. So when we got to Luna, we put the same antenna on a metal roof, but a different radio, and with that radio, actually the radio is what I'm using as a base now, with that radio, we could talk from Luna to Alpine, Arizona. Now, it was only 14 miles, but you got to understand the type of terrain and the mountains that we went over to get that 14 miles. It was, I've sat in downtown Alpine and talked to Amy on that base from Alpine to Luna. If you want your radio to work like that, you have to tune the antenna to the radio and to the mounting surface that it's on. You have to do that. I think we did talk to Cortez. That's only, what is that? It's 50 miles or so. And we couldn't do that routinely, but we did it pretty well when we could. We talked to Aztec all the time, and that was, I don't know how far it was from the shop to Aztec, probably, 16, 18 miles. And we could do that any time of the day or night. And we really, really did well with that. And I give the credit to Radio Doc. He really tuned our stuff up and done a real good job. If you have a radio that you want tuned properly, get a private message to Radio Doc and make arrangements to have to ship your radio to him. And most of them, make sure he knows what it is before you send it, so make sure he can do it. But he can make those things walk and talk, I'll guarantee you. All of my radio, if I get another new radio, I'm not even going to take it out of the box. I'm just going to send it to him and say, fix it, send it back. And back to the redundant communications. Well, should I get this or should I get that? Yes. Should I get that? Yes. Just get them. Just get whatever you can find, make it work, and have the extra degree of community. You can't, if we weren't so close to a poop hit the fan situation, yeah, I'd say, well, pick whatever you like, use what your friends are using, whatever's most convenient for you. I'll always be a big CB fan, just like Radio Doc is. And that would be fine. But right now, looking at the future that we have, by golly, I'm saying, get every possible means of communication that you can. Get a set of tom-toms, get a long string and a couple of tin cans, and whatever radios you can find, if it'll talk, you ought to get one. Corner be too basic. Thank you. Speaking of snow, I've got quite a story. Matter of fact, I'll do that story tonight. Let me go find that. There's about 35 or 40 miles from here. There is a, before you drop off the rim, let me see here, there we go. Before you drop off the rim here to go into Phoenix, over a little town called Forest Lakes. It's not even a town. It's a community with a, you know, a hotel and a gas station and whatnot, kind of a retirement deal or a winter winter community, snow ski community and stuff like that. But there's probably, I'd guess right now there's probably a good 4 feet over there, maybe better, depending on drifts and whatnot. But there's a lot of snow, and I've got a story here about snow that Amy sent to me. She wanted to do it, and let me see if I can find the cotton picking story here. Let's see. There we go. All right, what I'm going to do here, I'm going to make this easy for you. This is a neat story. You need to pay attention to it. This happened in 1952, I believe it was. And in the opening deal here that you can't, obviously you can't see it, it was in, it was tomorrow's history thing, and since she's not on tomorrow, I said, well, I'll do it today. Just, it's more about the snow than the history. Anyway, January 13th, 1952, Southern Pacific had a, what they called a streamliner, a passenger train out there. The city of San Francisco, they called it. Not the city of New Orleans, but the city of San Francisco. A luxury passenger train. And it got stranded where? Right on Donner Pass, Donner Summit. After being marooned for days, 222 people were rescued from this snowbound train. And this thing is a couple minutes long, but I want you to listen to it. It's a neat story.
Northern California digs out after the worst series of blizzards in 50 years. Roaring in from the Pacific, the storms have blanketed the countryside and halted all movement. Sometimes you have to dig for 10 feet to reach the roof of a car. With buildings nearly buried, the mailman's work becomes strenuous. Along one highway, a snow depth of almost 20 feet is measured. Below, almost hidden in the snow, lies the crack express train City of San Francisco, which stalled at Donner Pass, some 7,000 feet up in the high Sierras, while en route from Chicago to San Francisco. In Colfax, 34 miles away, nurses and other rescue workers board a relief train to go to the aid of the 222 passengers and crew members marooned on the snowbound streamliner. These scenes give an idea of the depth of the snow. The relief train finds the going tougher as it chugs higher in spite of a rotary plow in front to clear a way. Donner Pass got its name, by the way, from a party of pioneers who were stopped here 100 years ago by blizzards. There were no diesel trains to come to their rescue, and many perished from cold and starvation. Though nature has run wild here, snows are necessary, for they provide waters that irrigate California's farmland. 6 miles from the streamliner, heavy drifts force the relief train, whose forward section can be seen ahead, to stop. Provisions for the beleaguered passengers are loaded on army weasels, which, because of their caterpillar tread, can get across the snow to the stalled city of San Francisco. The weasel is an amphibious vehicle developed during the war and since found to have a variety of peacetime uses. Here is the city of San Francisco, hopelessly blocked by snowdrifts, its sides festooned with icicles. It's been here 3 days with the passengers aboard. A news magazine cameraman is the first newsreel man there. For the last 2 days, the passengers have gone without heat. 60 were overcome by gas fumes and are taken off on sled stretchers, but none suffered serious injuries, and they report that spirits were cheerful on the snowbound train. Then the monumental task of digging out the streamliner begins. Passengers are on their way home, but for two more days, the train lies embedded in its prison of snow. Now she moves. She's on her way. Man has won this particular skirmish in the unending battle with the forces of nature.
Didn't that sound like the narrator in Superman or something back in the day? You can obviously, that was a real old clip there. But it's a neat video to see the depth of the snow up there. Was up to the, in some places, up to the top of the cotton picking train. And they had this rotary plow thing, which I didn't even know they had them. Well, yeah, 1952, I guess they did. And they got bogged down even with that in front. But I thought that was an interesting story. I thought it was kind of neat. I thought I'd share that with you just for lack of anything better to do. Let me check up on the chat room here while we're catching our breath from that exhilarating story we just heard. Tell him, B2 Basic. Let him know. That's right. Oh, Susie B's going to wind up having to go to the corner. Doggone it. No. Oh, well. Right. Susie B got blocked by a 20-foot deep rock slide and decided to go. Let's see. All right, let's see here. Let's go on. There's a big story going on right now. I was kind of anxious to see how all this works out. This happened earlier today. I saw it on Facebook several times. And this is a couple of our Navy boats have been kidnapped by Iran. Said there was only 10 sailors on two boats, so I'm not sure. I haven't even read the story yet and see what the size of the boats were. But nevertheless, the Iran got them. And from the story I saw earlier, they were going to, the sailors were going to be turned loose to be able to allow to continue their, you know, their trip wherever they were going. But according to the deal, I guess they're keeping the boats at least for the time being. The, let's see, a spokesman for the Iranian, what is it, Iranian Coast Guard, whatever, I don't know what that abbreviation stands for, issued a statement confirming the arrest of 10 armed American personnel who breached Iranian territorial waters near the island of Farsi in the Persian Gulf when they were transferred there and were then transferred there. Let's see, he also stated the French aircraft carrier Charles de Gaulle was northeast of the island in international waters at the time. Spokesman insisted, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, long story here, and it goes back to, it ends with a paragraph here that says in 2007, Iran captured 15 British naval personnel for invading Iranian waters. Holding them for 2 weeks, Britain maintained the sailors were in Iraqi waters under a United Nations mandate when they were captured. So anyway, we'll see what happens. I think there'll be some, probably some interesting developments of that over the next 24 hours, I would imagine. So we'll keep you informed what's going on there. All right, I got to get rid of some of this rubbish off of here so I can find out what I'm doing. So I'll be back in a few minutes here.
Way.
again. You came back and never meant to stay.
Okay, are you ready? Here's Colt Reynolds with another maximum dose of truth and common sense on the shooting bench.
They say heaven's at the end, but so far it's been hell, and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, rolling them hills, and it's waiting for me
there. All right, here's a little song right here, written about the 1911. Doc, this is just for you.
We're jamming.
Yeah, we be jamming.
I wanna jam it with you. We're jamming, jamming. And I hope you like jamming too.
Yeah, get you a 1911. They'd write about a Glock or something about heavenly bodies or something. I'm not sure. Anyway. Okay. Let's see here. Hey, Radio Doc, that bass is working really. By the way, it was something I didn't mention there. Radio Doc came down here and visited me here a few months ago and helped me put up the antenna and get the bass tuned that I have now. And believe you me, I talk when I want to, and everybody else around here talks whenever they can. If I want to let them talk, they will. If I don't, they won't. That radio absolutely Will Walk and Talk. Does a fine, fine job. I've got a CB antenna on, 30 feet above the thing on one side of the building, and a shortwave radio about the same height on the other side. Okay, let's... I don't think we have talked about this yet. I'm trying to clean up some of my stuff here. This is one coming up in Tennessee. This was Tennessee Highway Patrol is going to enforce, get this, a no refusal traffic safety policy from New Year's Eve until Monday. Of course, it's already passed, but this will be in an effort, it says, to reduce the fatal crashes over the holiday. A law that was enacted in 2012 allows the police to force drivers to have blood drawn. Before that, drivers could decline such tests with the understanding that their driver's license would be suspended. I'm afraid I'd just have to say, well, just suspend it. You know, do whatever you got to do. I'll call the wife and have her come get the car. But you're not gonna be taking blood out of me. At least you ain't. You may get enough help that you can, but you're not going to. Said this year, troopers will patrol various checkpoints and bars, checking to ensure drivers are buckled up and sober. Officers will be allowed to seek search warrants, and any suspected impaired driver could be subject to blood sampling. This is some scary stuff. During the same holiday in 2014, 9 crashes killed 9 people, including 1 pedestrian and a child. 3 of those deaths were alcohol-related, and 4 of the deceased were not wearing seatbelts. This year, state troopers have arrested nearly 8,000 individuals while driving under the influence of alcohol. What do you expect? You're in Tennessee. Best whiskey in the world comes from Tennessee and Kentucky. Our department will be working diligently to make sure Tennesseans arrive at their destination safely. It is our intent to enforce traffic laws in order to keep Tennesseans safe. During this year's New Year's holiday, we hope you will enjoy your family and friends as you ring in, blah, 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 blah. The no refusal enforcement will take place in the following counties, blah, blah, blah. So, I don't know about y'all, but I kind of got a bad feeling about that. That just doesn't sit well with me. I saw that, and I haven't checked this story out yet, but I saw many posted up there that there's been, so far, in the first 10 days of 2016, there has been 120 people shot in Chicago. Now, I don't know what it was last year at this time. I don't know if this is higher or lower because of the concealed carry law there, or what, but it'd be interesting to find out. All right. Anonymous, you are absolutely right, buddy. Sometimes it seems we spend too much time with the noisy neighbors. Yeah, no doubt. And so, Doc, it's astonishing. It's unbelievable to me that in the United States of America that you can be driving down the road minding your own business and have to pull up to your papers, please, check point, and have a mandatory blood draw. Oh, man, that gets to me. All right, let's see. 12 a day. All right, let's look here. In Detroit, robber said, empty your pockets. Put it all on the counter. Well, they probably should have picked some other place to do this, in Michigan, they got a little better gun laws than some states do. Walked up behind a guy and said to empty everything out of his pockets, but it was about then the gun owner turned around and shot him. Rob would-be robber pronounced dead at the scene. No further injuries to report. That's I love these stories with happy endings. Poetic justice, one witness said, you come to do something that tainted. You know that militia can't hardly understand what they're saying here, and they've just wow. I'm going to read this exactly like it's written, okay? And then you guys can sort it out. I don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on here, but I'm going to read it like it's typed in here. It said, it's poetic justice. You come to do something that tainted, you know, that malicious, and it just that raunchy to another person, and he flips the script on you. So there you have it. Detroit police are not expecting to press charges against the gun owner. He was stunned just like any of the rest of us would be. We've been here 30 or 40 years, and we've never had anything like this happen. This was the store manager that said this. Detroit is famous for being high crime. It sure is. Detroit has really gone to the dogs these last several years. It's when I did a job there some years ago, it was pretty bad. And like I think I've told you once before, Detroit was the first place I'd ever seen a when you hand the money to the lady at the counter at the motel, you have a 1-inch Lexan, you know, bulletproof, bullet-resistant glass it's three panels. You've got two on one side, one on the other that goes into the middle of the first two. Does that make sense? You got two of them coming here that are probably less than a foot apart, and then you've got another one that slides in between those two, leaving about 5 inches or so on each side. So you slide the money, your credit card or whatever, into that. You can't reach around it. You can't shoot through it. You have to slide the money in there to the end of the little tunnel there. And then the lady reaches in and she grabs it and brings it back on her side. First place I ever seen anything like that. Of course, that was where we also saw the McDonald's with the dumbwaiter on the outside. You pull up to the drive-thru McDonald's and there's nobody there. There's nobody to talk to. You pull up to the thing and push a button, you talk through a speaker, and you just sit there. And pretty soon, the little door opens, and here comes your order, comes by on this little elevator thing, comes in under the street, because when you open the door, it was coming up. So it's riding underneath the driveway and comes up on the beside the, you know, up to your window there. Yep, and they had the fund deal for the Ronald McDonald House chained to the counter. That was the first time also that I'd seen that. I'd seen it several times since then, but that was the first time I'd seen it chained down like that. There's, you know, I saw something about blood supply here and getting Lyme disease. There's a possibility of doing something like that, I guess. But I do plan on the fort the day after tomorrow, as a matter of fact. If I can, I'm going to try to go in and give blood here in Sholo. And never have done that too often. But I think with the looking at the times, the way things are, I think it might be important that all of us that are able, that are qualified, I think it would probably be a pretty good idea that we make sure that our respective communities have a good supply of blood. This may become crucially important at some point. So we'll see what happens here. For those that are interested in what's going on, I told you I'm going to be teaching classes for Defensive Techniques Academy. We've planned our first class. It's going to be a 2-day personal defense handgun class down in Buckeye, Arizona. And we're already, since we've put this stuff on Facebook, I've already gotten requests for a 3-day class, which those of you that have taken it or have kept up with me, you know that 3-day class is includes a night shoot. And so we're going to schedule one here probably for those of you that are interested in doing that. we'll have to see how the winter and the snow, you know, there's supposed to be, you know, 19,000 feet of snow here this year. We haven't seen it yet. We do have quite a bit. We've gotten pretty good snows, but it hasn't been crippling yet. I did a 3-day class up in right outside of Bayfield, Colorado, a few years ago. Well, 2010, I guess. And we had the guy that hosted the class had a snowblower out there, and he went out. We probably had close to 2 feet of snow, 18 inches of snow, somewhere in there. And he went in and cut some little trails through there and cut us a firing line through there and a target line and stuff in the snow. And we went ahead and did the whole cotton picking thing. Thank you, B2 Basic. Went ahead and did the whole thing right there in 2 feet of snow. But we're not always going to be that lucky to have a host with a snowblower. So we may have to do some changing around of the schedule a little bit. But anyway, we're going to try in March. We've got the 12th and 13th of March. We're going to be down in Buckeye. And the fourth weekend is Easter. So either the 5th or the 9th, to the weekend of the 5th or the 19th, that would be the 4th, 5th, and 6th, or the 18th, 19th, and 20th, we're going to do a 3-day personal defense handgun class here locally. The exact date and time will be on our website. And if you guys ever want to check on that and see what's going on, I've updated some of it today. I've still got some work to do on it. But it's easy to find, southwestshootingauthority.com. And there's a deal there that says class and event schedule. So anytime we have anything going on, it will be put on that page. All right, let's go here. You guys, stop me if you've heard this one. Isn't that what you do when you're telling a joke that everybody's already heard? I don't think that I did this, but I'm about to find out, because I'm going to try to watch the chat room while I'm going along here, and you guys stop me if we've talked about this. The only reason I say it, because it's something that if it was just any old news story, I would say, well, don't worry about it. But this is something that we've talked about numerous times, and we did talk about another one where I believe a mother shot her daughter here not too long ago. Well, this is one where a cop in Las Vegas, a couple, both of them are cops, the man and the woman, wife and husband and wife, wake up and accidentally fired 27 rounds, accidentally, at the at one of them's mother. I guess the mother, the officer and her husband were asleep on Christmas night when the mother came home unexpectedly at 11:30 at night. And the couple accidentally, mind you, fired 27 rounds. Like Susie B says, stop. So I guess she's heard this one. Anyway, the okay, I'll stop. Never mind. That's about the end of the story. Anyway, I said it was the mother of one of the shooters. She had access to the home because she lived there and just walked in. And I think the take home message for this is to make sure that in your home, wherever you're at, I don't care where you are, at a motel or in your camping or at a friend's house or whatever the case may be, you have to, would these people, two of them wake up and accidentally fire 27 rounds if they had noticed that, either that or they don't like that woman very much? And Yakima Glock, I will explain that, how I think that happened. Yeah, they're protecting and serving the hell out of her, aren't they? Yeah. But I think what has possibly could have happened here, unless they were just trying to collect on an insurance policy or something, I think what possibly could have happened is that they became, you know, once the first shot is fired and someone else close by, they fire a shot, then the two of them have this fever. That was, 13 rounds out of one and 14 out of the other, or, 12 and 15 or whatever the number was. But I think that's what happened to that guy that shot that kid 16 times in wherever that was. And I think that you become, I've told you the stories of people that would be shooting a revolver and bang, 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 click, 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 they just keep on pulling the trigger and can't stop. So I think once the initial thing got started, that they just went blazing away, probably until both of them were empty. Both of them probably scared to death. Maybe they woke up out of a dead sleep. But these are the types of things that a person should think about, and a little bit difficult to practice, but it's something that you should be very careful with dry practicing. Get somebody to be a role player, remove all ammunition from the gun and from the room, and put it somewhere else and close the door and not have any live ammunition in there. Or use your finger gun, use a squirt gun, use an airsoft gun or something. And see if you can start developing some habits of unassing the couch and accessing a flashlight or a light switch or something while moving off the X. Get out of the way and see if you can determine what this is. Is it really a threat or is it your daughter? This is a guy in starts with a K, but it was in Louisiana. Kennesaw is in Georgia. I can't think of it. But anyway, this guy and his wife decided that they were going to go out and have dinner. And the 14-year-old girl wanted to go and spend the night with the neighbor. And so the couple left and they finished their dinner. They got ready to come home. What they didn't know was that the water lines had broken or something there. And they said, well, it'd be better if we didn't have the extra, extra body needing water or whatever it was. Maybe they abandoned the house for the night until the plumber got there or something. But whatever it was, the little girl came home early. She wasn't supposed to be home till tomorrow. And so she sees car lights coming down the driveway. And she jumps up and runs in there and says, I'm going to have fun with this. I'm going to scare Daddy. Well, Daddy carries a 1911. And she went and hid in the closet. And the dad comes home and reaches for the door to unlock the door, and it's already unlocked. And he distinctly remembers locking the door. So he tells the wife to get back in the car. And he pulls his gun, gets his flashlight, and is clearing the house. He walks in the bedroom and goes to turn to leave, and at that point was facing the closet. And the little girl jumps out and to scare him, and she did. He fired at least two rounds into his daughter, and she died in his arms. The last words that man will remember his daughter saying was, I love you, Daddy. Now, if you think you can live with something like that, or if you don't want to have to try to live with something like that, then I would suggest that you do some practicing, do some thinking about, you can dry practice in your head. you can do what we call mental imaging, and or mental imagery, depending on who you ask, and practice these scenarios in your head. What would happen? Making sure that you identify. Now, you know, I can't, as bad as I feel for that man, I can't, it'd be hard to blame him. Thinking that there's an intruder in the house, searching, in fact, for that intruder. And having somebody jump out of the closet when while you're searching like that. I have no words for that at all. I can't imagine. The little girl was, now I guess I could say that the man is at fault, because the little girl should have known better than to do that. That should happen in some type of family training. I can assure you that none of my kids would jump out of a closet and try to scare me coming home from a deal like that. So I guess in some regards I could blame the dad for that, for not being more diligent with family training. But anyway, that would be a hard thing to live with, so I strongly encourage you all to spend some time thinking about scenarios like that. And yeah, Yakima Glock, yeah, you ain't kidding. That would be something that I think the average man or woman would never get over. That would be something that, you know, that would probably cause a lot of people just to shoot themselves right on the spot. It would cause a lot of people to get in, you know, lose themselves in a bottle, or in a, you know, with a syringe or whatever. I can't imagine what someone would go through doing something like that. That was just a cat. Be too basic. That's okay. All right. Let me see what Many Men Pin put up here. 12-year-old girl shot and killed by a Pennsylvania state constable during apartment eviction. That's, I hate stories like that. All right, don't have any updates right now from Oregon. I told you last night that the newest news, and I'll just go over it very briefly, very quickly here. The sheriff of that county was not elected. He was appointed. He was appointed by a judge who was the chairman for the county commissioners. And his wife works for BLM. And I think that the... I think that the cops, the sheriff's wife, or the sheriff himself, I think, worked for BLM at some point. So that's what's going on in Oregon right now. Didn't see anything really new today. Well, yeah, I did. Yes, I did. By golly, we've got a couple minutes. Let's burn it up here. I did see a new story today, and this was apparently at this refuge. There's some buildings there where they are storing some documents, some federal documents. Now, this goes back here once again, or maybe I shouldn't say federal documents. Maybe I should say documents concerning federal entities there. If it's not a federal building or a federal complex, then there should be no federal documents around there. So I'm not sure what that is. But at any rate, the folks that are there, and I don't think this was a wise idea, went to snooping around some of those buildings and found some documents that could, in fact, incriminate some of the local officials maybe in BLM people, in the conviction of the Hammonds. They may have found some stuff. And this is going to be... I'm not opposed to them digging around there and finding that stuff. I'm opposed to them saying anything about it right now. That, in my opinion, was a bad move. And it just put it all over Facebook today, so I'm not telling you anything that everybody on Facebook doesn't already know. I found it there, matter of fact, early this morning before I even got up. I told Amy, oh, God, you, I've got to be kidding me. Really? And that's what we found out. So, yes, there could be some stuff there that will be beneficial to the whole, to the Hammonds and all that, but it was a, that stuff should have been secured. Everybody should have kept their mouth shut, and those documents should have made it off the property in a lawyer's hand or, you know, somebody that you can trust to get it to a lawyer or whatever. It should not have been leaked out all over Facebook. But, you know, so far, for everything that they've done, whether we thought it was the right or wrong, it seems like thus far they have kind of they've come out smelling like a rose in most of it. So we'll see how this turns out. And if I hear anything, I will most assuredly let you know. So I'm going to ease on out of here, and we'll see you tomorrow. Amy will not be on tomorrow night. And I'll be on at my regular time. We'll see you then. Thanks for joining me. Okay, let's call it a day. Thank you for joining me. Join me every Monday through Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific time for the Shooting Bench, right here on Just Measures Radio Network. Let's free.